This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. At the bottom of the hour, my special guest is Angela Hunt, the best-selling author of over 100 books, and she's going to be talking about a wonderful workshop that she is holding for writers in February. But first, I'm going to go to my guest in the studio here, Ray Weaver. Ray, welcome to Joy on Paper.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm so thrilled because what I love is when somebody starts writing, they've had one career, and then they finish that career, they retire, and instead of just vegetating, they start growing, and you certainly have done that with your books. You just brought in the fifth and what you say is the final of this series that is I have just so enjoyed. I've been I read European Justice, which is the third in your book and series, and I gave it to my sister, and my sister has to be she should be like a rating queen, because when she reads a book and she likes it, I know it's a winner. So when she read it, she said, wow, this guy is really, really good because he makes it come alive. So we'll talk about all of your books. Let's talk about how you started and got decided to become a writer.
Well, about 10 years ago, I had a thought about how I about a story, and I wanted to get it down on paper, and I just didn't know where to begin. And I ran into a nice lady called Diane Mark, who belonged to Pinawar. She said, Ray, why don't you come over to the meetings, which is once a week from 9:30 to 12, and you'll get to meet other writers, and maybe you can get some inspiration. Maybe we can answer some of your questions. Well, after about three or four meetings, I began talking to people, and they were kind of pointing out, what are you planning to write? Well, the number one tip that I always ask, people always ask me is how do I get started? Well, what I was told to do, and it really helped me, was first of all, get your subject. As an example, there was a little lady from New York who was at one of the book signings that I had, and she had a story about how she grew up in New York. She said, that's all I can think of. I said, well, let's put down an outline. When do you remember your first thoughts of New York? She said, oh, when I was about seven, I remember playing stickball with the boys. So we wrote down stickball, chapter one. Then chapter three, she remembered how her father got ill, and that was chapter two. And she began telling all the little things, and all we did was just get down the names of the chapters. And I said, well, you have about 10 chapters here. Let's start over. Then she started to describe how it was to do playing stickball, and how the boys would tease her, and how she was almost a tomboy. And I said, just write three pages. That's all. Just get that down. Let's go to the next chapter. Well, when she was finished, she called me. She said, well, I got that done. I said, okay, now let's expand a little. And what I do with my books, as the first one was called Tightrope to Justice, I had Kelly Ryan as my hero. And she's been told that her uncle's been killed, and she thinks he's been murdered. Well, that was chapter one. Chapter two, she gets on her motorcycle and goes out to the morgue and sees, yes, that's my uncle. And in the third chapter, why, she then joins a private eye firm, and she's going to find out who did it. So each chapter, she's getting close to where she had thought that she knew who did it. And the twist is, she was all wrong. It was someone else. But she finds out with a fellow that she meets at her, and he helps her solve the crime. So in the next book, why, I had more continuations. This time, Kelly went down to Miami and got a new partner, and those stories took place.
Let's talk a little bit about the partner that she got in that.
Well, the young fellow that she had met, is so manipulated that she had him helping her. One of the scenes in the first thing, she goes to, there's a mayor's son is going to jump off the bridge. and she gets him to climb up the rope and bring the guy down, and she's at the bottom, and it's just scary that he's swinging there, and how does she ever talk me into it? And yet he can't say no to her. And so in the third book, why they do to get married, and then they really have some fun because they're on the Queen Mary. Now, the third book is called European Justice. I visited all three of the countries that are in the story, and the first, she goes to London and meets a former partner. Then she goes to Ireland and meets her grandmother, who she thinks is in a walker, but little granny drives a Jeep, wears a funny hat and sidearm, and you just love her mother. And then the final, she goes to Sicily, and that's the way the story ends. And then the story moves on to the fourth, where her husband now is an attorney, and she helps him as a lawyer. And then the last story, the one I just gave Mitzi, was called Final Justice. The children are now grown, and the daughter is an attorney. So the scene opens up father against daughter on in a jury room trying to solve a crime and find out, is the guy guilty or not guilty? So I make my stories interesting. But to go back to the lady that I had visited with and was starting to write, I told her that one of the things that they told me is when you get to kind of the end of the chapter, you got to kind of leave the little person wanting to go into that next chapter. As an example, she's sitting there not feeling very good about, she hadn't found out who done it yet. But wait, I have an idea, her future husband says. Why don't we do this? Now we go to the next chapter. Well, we want to find out what she's going to do. One of the things that I'm really very proud of is when I finish a book, then I re-edit it. And that probably is the longest and most important thing to do. I want to make sure there's no spelling mistakes. I want to make sure every name is correct. I want to feel very proud of the book. And I put it and had a publisher that helped me put it together in a sense that it's very easy to read and it flows very well. And just one last little thing to show you how I learned from the Pinawar group is I had the opening scene where my heroine, Kelly, has been told about her uncle from the chief of police. And so one of the other writers there said, Ray, I think it'd be better if you had a woman police officer come to her house. Remember, it's 4 a.m. And so little tips like that is what you seem to like and what people are looking for when they read it, something a little bit more interesting. And I have to finally say that one of the most things that I do, all my books are all fiction.
Okay. I liked in book two where you introduced the Scotland Yard.
Yes.
A transfer to America here of somebody from Scotland Yard, and that makes an interesting dynamic.
Yes. Well, one of the things that there are two things, even though I'm writing fiction, I have to make sure that if I put something about Scotland Yard, it takes place in London. If you're putting something about an Eiffel Tower, you want to make sure it's in Paris. Because people that read things are very good reading, you probably can pick up almost a newspaper every day and find spelling mistakes. And as a writer, and you know, boy, he didn't know how to spell that word, you know. So I'm very careful in making sure that all my readers don't have to look for flaws. They look for an enjoyment.
Yes. That's one of my sister, Natalie, is the type of person, she can pick up any book. It can be published by the most important publisher in the world. It can be the most famous author in the world. And within 30 minutes, she's already found the typos and where commas are missing. It's quite amazing. So, but it is, you're right. It is important to get these right because it's disturbing to the reader if they find misspelled words. And I have, not too long ago, I found a very well-known author whose books somebody did not edit properly because there were major errors in grammar and spelling. And it is disconcerting to the reader. Now, when you published your first book, did you publish it directly yourself, and did you learn from your mistakes on publishing?
I really have never had any mistakes in publishing due to the fact that I picked a lady that belonged to Pinawar and had published a lot of other books.
Okay.
And she did the guidance there. She helped select the cover. She helped find the different ESPN numbers, and she made sure that the bio was correct. And so when it actually finished, they send you a copy. She brought me a copy of how the book would look when it's finally finished, and we kind of re-edited it again and looked for things. And they had her living in Myrtle Beach, and she that lives here in Florida. So there was a mistake even on a little simple thing like that. I had nothing to do with. So we corrected all that. And so when it finally gets into your hand, that book is ready to be read.
And when you're writing, are you writing, do you type it out first or do you write it longhand?
Well, this, I have to tell you a little bit about my love life. It won't take long.
Uh-huh.
The young lady sitting behind me is my wife, Ellie. And what I do is I write on a legal pad and I write it as fast as I can. The first thing I do is just to get the story down. I'm not worried about who the people are in the story. I'm not worried. I just want to get the story down. Then I sit down, and then I start to rewrite it, taking that first chapter. And she does all the typing for me. She's a much faster typist than I was ever. So once it's been typed, even at a rough start, it makes it a little bit easier to read. And all the long words that I've thrown in, because in my one of my stories, I have a Scottish gal interested in a local an American, and I have to make sure all the things in there are right. So once I get that down, then it starts to fall together. See, right now I've just finished my eighth book, and in it it's the first edit is there. That's fine. Now I can read it and I say, okay, let's give the woman a little description. Let's work on the place and about where they are living. Then that part comes in next. The main thing is that the story is complete and I know how it's going to end. Then I can fill it in. It's almost like taking a little trip to downtown Tampa. You go pretty fast. You look around, but you got an idea what Tampa looks like. Then when you get back, then you start to describe Tampa a little bit. My first book on my stories take place in Pinellas County. So people here in Florida are reading are welcome. Instead of calling it Tarpon Springs, I called it Dolphin Springs. I had to just play a little play on words, you know. Uh-huh. So I can play a little bit about it, but I have to make sure that, you know, that if I'm working in Tampa, somebody's been to Tarpon, they know how far it is. So I can't say 400 miles from Tampa was, I have to make sure my facts are straight.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you have also been published. You've had four stories published in Chicken Soup, the Chicken
Yes.
Soup series. So that has really helped you, I think, to build an audience.
Yeah. Well, I think if anybody, and I just couldn't believe the amount of people that Chicken Soup has, they have about 80 to 100 stories in one book. And so you're one of the stories that's in the book. One of the things that they told when I first wrote was called Twins and More, which I wrote about my twin brother. Well, other stories in there are about people who have had twins or triplets. So when I was doing my book signing, everybody would buy two books because the one lady was always buying it for her two daughters. So I have to figure a way how I could get the other books and get maybe five people in the book so they can buy five books. So that is the fun. But that's I want to make sure that I think everybody realizes a lot of people think they're getting in the writing that they're going to become famous. Well, very few people become famous. I just love to write. I just enjoy it. And when I go home, I'll start working on another story. That is the fun that you have to find out. And it's kind of nice to have my wife who kind of pushes me a little bit. When are you going to finish that story? She said, oh, I'm going to do it now. Start writing. Quit talking.
She's been doing that for how many years?
Well, 57.
57 years.
Only 10 on the writing.
Well, you know, she's done a good job because you don't look old enough to have been married for 57 years. It's fantastic.
Well, radio will do that to you.
Okay. But it also, it does keep you young to write, to not to, because, of course, I know that one of your jobs that you did after you retired was to work in a retirement home or seniors home. And it's important not to vegetate, not to let your mind go.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think if what I would suggest of anybody, if they just want to write short stories, to just type up Chicken Soup for the Soul, and then they'll get on their website, they will give you directions, how many words to write for a short story. They like to have basically, in fact, that's one of the things that I'm very proud of. All my books that I've written, there is nothing that you kind of get blushed over. I have a couple in the European justice. It's a husband and wife. They discovered a body, and they go to bed at night, and they're talking, what should we do next? Should we see the captain? And so anyway, one of the people said, well, hey, what's going on in bed there? I said, somebody else can write about that. We want to find out who the dead body is. That's what we're interested. So I found that people, and I think sometimes the movies can be just a little trashy, and they really don't have to.
No, you don't need that. These are just fun mysteries, just enjoyable little stories.
Well, I think this lovely lady next to me will tell you that she will meet people and she'll talk to them for hours. And I doubt very much there's anything that they're embarrassed about. They're interested to find out who you are, what's been going on, tell me about your son. So people are interested in facts, not so much in the words.
Yeah, that's true. I just had a wonderful Marine on, who Johnny Clark, who wrote war stories. And he realized that he didn't need to use all the bad language that one might use, even in a war story. And as a result, when he took out all the very, very bad language, he started selling books, because people just enjoyed reading the story of the people and what it meant to go into war and what it meant to be a hero. And he didn't need the bad language, so it worked out very well for him, too.
Mm-hmm. I've been very fortunate. People say, well, on your publishing, you get it published and you have the book in your hand. How do you do the marketing? Well, one of the things that I do, that I have different groups that I speak to, I'm holding up a baseball cap that says Miami Justice. The shirt says that's my little advertising. That's my little marketing. And so people say, well, what's Miami Justice? I mean, it just happened to be a book I wrote. Oh, and then you get them going. And if you make your, one of the things when you do have it and you want to sell your book, you have to make it affordable. $29.95 might be something that Mrs. Obama can get away with, and the publishers are glad to sell a million books. But someone like yourself who's self-published, you have to make it maybe $12.95. And I try to get my books done before the holiday, because when I was at the last seminary where I sold quite a few books, using these as nice gifts, you know, and something that somebody said, where did I get this book, you know, so... That's one of the ways I market it.
Well, it's essential, really, to price it right, I think, because if you price it too high, it's just not going to sell. Mm-hmm. And at that price, you get such a value. I think your books are, what I really love about them is that they're full with interesting little tidbits of information, whether it's about Florida. At one point, you have, of course, Kelly's working for the governor, is called in by the governor of Florida to work on a task force type of thing. And, of course, the Scotland Yard detective. All of these things are just, and the travel, I love this European travel. It really is so interesting. You've really made it a fascinating read.
One of the things that I had to be very careful is sometimes you and I may be talking and I may go on with the subject on and on and on, and finally you take me by the hand and you say, you made your point. So when you're writing, if you're writing about a certain thing that happened, get it in there, make it quick and move it along and then move to the next thing, instead of spending four chapters on one idea. Finally, the people are tired. Enough with this. Is there anything else going on here? You know.
Well, you do. Your books move very nicely. They flow. They have a great flow. I don't know how much you studied arcs and all of that stuff that they have in writing, but you've just done it almost naturally. It's very, very good.
I won't tell you how old I am, but one of the things I learned when I went to the movies was where they called serials, where they had, or even the James Bond, the plane is going down, you think he's going to crash, you think he's going to crash, he's not going to pull out, and all of a sudden you get the next chapter, he just barely makes it, you know. You have to get the content, he's going to make it, she's going to get well, isn't she? You
and
have
build
to
get, the tension.
Build the tension. Tension is very important, and especially you'll notice that when certain books you write or even TV shows, we'll have that, you know, tune in next week, see if she doesn't make it. Well, we don't. All we got to do is go to the next chapter.
Well, you've done a great job. Speaking just of that European vacation, and you mentioned the Queen Mary, did you actually take that cruise?
I I didn't take the same cruise. My wife and I toured London. We did tour. We went on tours. When I wrote about the ship, I had met a lady at the nursing home that worked on the Queen Mary. And I said, "Lady, I'm going to pick your little mind a little bit." She said, "Well, what's that?" And I said, "Tell me a little about the Queen Mary." Well, it took three visits to get everything she told about and how they treated her and how the celebrities were treated and how the poor little guys that worked on the ship were a little bit humble. So I got a feeling like I was almost on that ship.
Well, that's one of the fun things. So often people don't realize that the people around you can be the best resource for your books. Whether you're writing about a certain town, in any group that you go to, you'll find somebody who's been to that town or lived in that town or grew up in that town. And all of that adds the flavor to your writing.
Yeah. One of the books that I did finish was called Three Courageous Women. And in the third story, it's about three different women that were as low as they can get in life and how they bounce back and how they grow. It's about a Scottish girl that a young American is interested in. Well, because we have Dunedin close by here, I went to the Scottish Games. I even had a lady at the nursing home who was from Scotland, and I got a lot of information, and she made me feel like, you know, so sometimes they put in little Scottish phrases and certain things, but I had to be very accurate on the games to make sure what I was putting in there worked.
Well, Ray, you've done a terrific job. I'm so happy to have you here. Ray Weaver, who's most recent book is called Final Justice. It's a fifth in a series of the Justice series. Well worth reading, well worth getting. They're all available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Yes, ma'am.
And does Barnes & Noble here in Clearwater carry them?
No, not Barnes & Noble.
No, not Barnes & Noble.
They carry the chicken soup books.
The chicken soup books. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you can look for Ray's chicken soup books. You can go to Amazon, and they're available. I know I read one of them in Kindle. Mm-hmm. And this one is beautifully done. As Ray said, he's really taken time to make sure that they look good and that they're well written and well edited. So
they are available in libraries.
In libraries,
yes,
too.
Ma'am.
Okay. Well, Ray, thank you so much,
and thank you, Ellie,
for joining us today. Yes. It's so nice to have you back there. And so, everybody, check out Ray Weaver, and I hope that you'll put your books down at Miami Avenue Book Nook, because
I plan to.
It's a wonderful place to get some books. And I'm going to take a commercial break, and when I come back, we're going to have Angela Hunt to talk about her exciting workshop that's coming up in February. We'll be right back.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brandvik, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side, on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200, extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I'm back with my guest, Angela Hunt, who's here in the studio today to talk to us about, well, not just about her wonderful books, and she has written over 100 of them, but about her fantastic workshop that she's having in February. Hi, mm-hmm. Angela.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's such a thrill. I know that I always talk to everybody about your wonderful series of, well, I love your biblical series of the all of the women in the Bible, from Delilah to Bathsheba. They're all so exciting, fantastic books.
Thank
and of
you.
Course, you wrote the wonderful novelization of Risen, the best, the hit film. And I think that one of the, well, certainly I think it's actually the best novelization I've read of a book, of a movie. Because
thank
it's not easy to do that. It's not easy to turn take a movie and then turn it into a novel that really seems that you came out with the whole story yourself, you know, and you managed to do that with Risen. So it's a fantastic book.
Thank you.
But this must be exciting for you to have a workshop.
I really am excited about it. For years, I've taught at writers' workshops all over the country, and people are always saying to me, especially people in this area, they're always saying, well, when are you going to teach here? Because there really aren't any major writers' conferences right here in this area in Pinellas County. And so I just decided, you know, I'm going to kind of step out on faith and do it. So I rented a room and, you know, made all the arrangements. And so we're just going to do it two days.
Okay, so it's going to take place at?
The Harborside, what is it? Is it a Holiday Inn? Harborside Holiday Inn.
Right there in
Indian Rocks Beach.
It's a lovely location for anybody who hasn't been here. Indian Rocks Beach is fantastic. And the Holiday Inn, the new hall, they've refurbished it.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely a beautiful hotel.
Right. It's right on the intercoastal, and the beach is like right across the street the other direction. So some people are coming from out of town and staying in the hotel. So I'm just kind of tickled that it's all coming together.
Well, it's going to be for 2 days, and the workshop will run from what time to what time?
9 a.m. through 4 p.m., we might go a little over if we're still talking.
I'm sure you will be. that's what happens with writers. You go to these workshops and they can't stop talking.
Yes. But breakfast and lunch is furnished every day, and everybody receives a 400-page book that I put together that's almost everything I knew about writing, and then a workbook to follow along with in class. And I always tell people, the workbook is on Amazon, but do not buy it unless you're going to the class, because otherwise it will make no sense. I'm one of those who believe that people learn things by writing them down. It's just an extra step that sort of puts it in your brain. And a lot of times at a conference, people will say, oh, I'm not going to your class. I'm just going to get your handouts. And I always say, well, they're not going to help you because they're pretty much a blank sheet of paper with some numbers on them. And so that's the workbook is definitely geared to take notes on as you're sitting in the class.
Well, that's true. I think that when you write something down, it just goes into your mind. And I taught that to my boys when, mm-hmm. you know, write it down. It doesn't matter. You think that you can just put things down, you know, or type them even into the computer as the teacher's talking. But when you actually write something down, it's some physiological thing in our brain.
It is. It's a reinforcement.
It does. Mm-hmm. It does do that.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you going to be now? What type of people do you expect to come to this seminar? What type of people should come? Are people who have written already, or people who are just dreaming of writing? What kind of people are you looking for?
All of the above. I said on the website, which is, by the way, writeagreatbook.info, I think kids 14 and up would learn a lot from it. stuff that will even help them in college when they're doing their essays and writing their papers. But anybody who has written a book already, I always have people, published authors, come to my classes and say, oh my goodness, I learned so much. I'm surprised because, you know, I thought I knew it.
Uh-huh.
Because I really, I'm sort of a brass tacks person, so I'm always taking the big thing of writing and just boiling it down to the essentials and the things that are really important. And when I write, I do 5 drafts, and every draft tackles a specific thing. The first one is all plot. The second one is characterization. The third one is what I call mood music. And then the fourth and the fifth ones are that self-editing thing where you're looking for overused words and repetitions and punctuation and grammar and spelling and all of the editorial type things. So you have to master all of those areas. And for me, it helps as a writer to concentrate on those areas with every pass. So I just keep going over it. Someone once said, writing is not writing. Writing is rewriting. And there is nothing truer.
Absolutely. I always, it's always so cute. I will meet writers and they say, I finished my book and I'm sending out my query letter. And I said, well, when did you finish your book? Friday. And I said, it's Sunday. And you're sending, you finished it. I wrote the end. I said, you should have written the beginning.
Exactly.
Because that is, that you're not ready, you know.
I know.
But it's cute. I mean,
you
have to sort of burst their bubble because you have to say, okay, because this happened to me. It was so funny. I was in Sunday school. I was teaching in Sunday school, and one of the mothers said, this is exactly what she told me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's been working, and she had been working, and knowing that I have a radio program, she was so happy to tell me. I think she was ready for me to schedule her. You know, I finished it on Friday. It's Sunday, and she's telling me she's ready to send out her query letters.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hated to say to her, okay, well, I think we have a little bit of work here to do.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, people, they come by that mistake, honestly, because think of all the movies. In Romancing the Stone, the character, she writes the scene, and then ta-da, she's done. And in As Good as It Gets, Jack Nicholson is writing a book, and suddenly he types the end, by the way, which nobody ever writes, because the correct thing is the pound symbol 3 times. And then he's done, and, you know, we're led to believe that. That first draft, you're done, and, oh, the truth is a long way from that.
It is. So that's why doing a workshop like Angela's, I just want to tell everybody, and to learn from Angela, who is, your writing is so wonderful because you are, well, you combine that wonderful ability to write very descriptive narrative that really draws you into a scene, and also dialogue. So it's a combination of being able to flow and to really make a rich and full story that is wonderful in your books. And I think that anyone can, you know, benefit from learning from how you do that.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah. One of the things I it's so important, the editing part,
mm-hmm.
which you, of course, now have mastered, because now you've written so many books, over 100 published books.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And a few probably stuffed in a drawer somewhere.
We don't let those come out.
We don't let those come out. But to one of the things that, you know, writers have to understand is you have to take these paragraphs that you might cherish. You love this paragraph. It's a beautiful paragraph. And then to know that you probably are going to have to rewrite it.
Sure. Or cut it all together. I always tell my writers, if there's a section, if there's a scene or a paragraph or anything that does not either advance the plot or deepen character, it needs to be cut. And then I tell them what you do is you do not hit the delete key. You set up a special folder and you call it deleted stuff. And then you copy and paste it in a document in that folder. And that way you haven't killed it. It's still there if you need it. But 99.9% of the time, I do that, and I never go back to that folder because you just don't need it.
But you're right. It is. for a writer, it's like your baby.
It is.
And it's hard mm-hmm. to chop off these bits and pieces, but if it makes the baby more beautiful, mm-hmm. then you have to do it. But it is. I think it's a good idea to save it, too. And then you can go back and say,
ugh. Sure. Kill yeah. your darlings. Some writer said that. My mind's gone blank at the moment. But kill your darlings. That's what it sort of feels like. But that's okay. Just putting it in a folder sort of eases the pain a bit.
Exactly. And so now are you at the workshop once, if for example, a writer has something that they've written, are you going to, I'm sure they're going to ask you to read it. Are you going to just be reading chapters or a few chapters of what they write, or how are you going to do that?
If we have time, I might ask some of them to email me a page, and then we'll do what I call a public critique, which I will put it up on an overhead or on a screen or put it on my computer so that everyone can see it. And I will just quickly do an edit and show where the weaknesses are and how they can be fixed without revealing the name of the person, of course. I'll do as many of those as I have time for. But honestly, I have learned that the best way to spend my time is not to go to each individual's work, but to give them the tools. It's the old principle, give a man a fish and you feed him for a meal, but teach him how to fish and you've set him up for a lifetime. I would rather spend my time teaching them how to take their present work and go back and fix it. I do hope that everybody that comes will have a work in progress so they can go back in and clean it up and fix it. And I will be saying things like, all right, your heroine right now, what is her defining quality and how have you illustrated that in the first paragraph? And that way, ooh, I haven't done that. Then they can go back and do that, and they'll know what they're looking for.
Whoa, okay. Those are the kind of details that writers and people who want to write need to learn.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. What do you find when writers come to you, what do you find is the most difficult thing that they're having a problem with? The pacing, the description of their characters? What do you find?
I think the worst problem is that the goal of the character or the thing that this character is striving for is not important enough. Because I always say, if your character does not meet their goal, if they do not get the girl, if it's a romance, or if they do not save the world, if it's James Bond, then what happens? And if the answer is life just goes back to the way it was, then that story has no high stakes, and it's really kind of boring. The character has to be so committed to getting the girl or saving the world that he sacrifices things and he burns bridges along the journey so that if he does not reach his goal, his life is ruined. He has put everything on the line. And it's when characters are striving for those kinds of things that readers really get caught up in the story, kind of do or die, you know.
Well, you have that very much in your Biblical Women series.
Mm-hmm.
You have them striving for goals, and yeah. it's amazing how you've taken very minimalist information about the characters, especially the women in the Bible aren't described a great deal. There's not a great deal of information about them, but how you took each of them and came out with a goal for them, mm-hmm. and something that they were striving for. And you've woven such wonderful and rich stories.
I was fortunate in that the Bible, you're right, does not give us a lot of background, but we know a lot about the culture, so that I knew, actually the Bible does say this, that if Esther went to the king uncalled for, she would lose her life right there. And if Bathsheba, her goal was to see Solomon safely to the throne, and she had already watched David have Absalom killed, no, not Absalom, the first one, Amnon, and he didn't do it actively, but he allowed it to happen, and she could lose her son just as easily as have him saved. So the risks were always very, very high for these women. And it should be for all of our major characters.
And that's why your books are so very compelling.
Oh, thank you.
And I think that writers will really enjoy working with you on you know, because one, you have this nice she just has a nice personality, everybody. I just want to tell everybody she's just delightful. And Angela, you know, when it, one of the things writers, you know, people who are just coming into it are always a little bit fearful of, are they doing the right thing? Are they on the right track? Is it worth it? And I was very impressed with my guest before you, Ray Weaver, mm-hmm. and how he has just jumped into it and made the decision to, you know, put himself out there and to write. Mm-hmm. And he learned along the way. Again, it's always important to find somebody who can help you, somebody who has the experience. And for example, with him, with editing, because you might be have the story in your head. You mm-hmm. might even know, you know, your goals, what you want to say. But it's that next phase, that editing phase, which you really need help with. And I think that whatever you can teach your mm-hmm. your participants at the workshop will be useful.
I was really impressed because he joined a local writers group and got help. Because a lot of people think that just because they had English composition in high school that they're qualified to write a story. But professional writing is a whole different thing altogether. We don't like adverbs. We barely tolerate adjectives. And it's all about how something is written. One thing I do, here's a writing tip, free for anybody who's listening. After I've written a manuscript, I use the search and replace function in my computer, and I search for every was and every were, and I replace them with the same word, was or were, but in all capital letters. And then every time the next pass, of course, I see those, they kind of jump out at me, and I think, okay, how can I make this better? Because was and were are passive verbs. The cat was on the table. We are a video generation. We're used to seeing stories play like movies in our minds. So the cat was on the table is not going to cut it in one of my books. The cat has to yawn on the table, sit on the table, retch on the table, sleep on the table, curl on the table. He's got to do something, but never was.
Wow. That is a very valuable tip that all of you have gotten from Angela Hunt, an author who has written over 100 books, so it's fantastic. And quite a few of them are actually on writing. You wrote...
Yes, I have a little series. They're all on Amazon, and then I put them all together. I think there are 10 altogether, but they cover things like plotting, point of view, which a lot of beginning writers completely... don't have a clue about.
And let's just mention quickly, let's mention point of view, because when you... You said that. It reminded me, I was recently given a book to read, and that person's, they got completely confused on the point of view. It is all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So what does point of view mean, and how can people control it?
Okay, well, omniscient point of view is what they wrote 100 years ago, and if you use it today, your writing is going to come off as stilted and old-fashioned, and you won't even realize it. But that's the number one mistake. People start out using omniscient, in which you're telling what every character is thinking. The proper way, the most common way today to tell a story, is to use one character point of view per scene. So if you're in Tom's head, Tom walked into the room and looked around. There stood Lucia over in the corner, looking lovely as always. Oh, how he missed her, period. Okay, now what's wrong would be to do this. Tom walked into the room and looked around. There stood Lucia over in the corner looking lovely as always. Oh my goodness, how good to see Tom, Lucia thought. Mm-hmm. And see how I jumped from Tom's head into Lucia's? No. That's a bugaboo. We don't do that.
Okay, well, see, you're learning right here, and you can learn more by joining Angela Hunt in a workshop, which is from February...
11th and 12th. It's a Saturday and Sunday.
Saturday and Sunday in February. A perfect time to study writing, I think. It's a wonderful time here in Florida. The weather's great, and if you have family around with you. You can shove them over at the beach and
let the kids go play.
They can run over to Miami Avenue Wine and Wine Bar, music and art, and sit over there and drink wine while you're working, because it's just that's a perfect timing, actually. The number of hours that you've put into it, I think, is just the right time. And you get a free lunch in there and the workbook. And I think it's just fantastic that you're doing this for the area, because one of the things that I want to do, and as you know, I've been involved in this Miami Avenue Book Nook, to showcase local authors, is I want to really turn this area, because it is the perfect area for writers, into a real writer's community, so that we have so many talented writers in our area. Of course, right here, you met Ray Weaver. And there are so many others, like Carol J. Perry and Sue Kochman and Rita Moreau. And we have so many wonderful writers in the area. Mm-hmm. And it's just lovely to turn this area. And I think with your new workshop, it's going to be a wonderful thing to bring out. And I understand you're also going to videotape this workshop.
Yes, I am. I would love to be able to make it available, for instance, on Amazon or something. But it's really a lot of fun to actually be there in the flesh, because we dance, we sing, it's very interactive.
It is. It is wonderful to meet with the people and to have that exchange. And as I know, it's going to last beyond 4 o'clock, and people will be trying to keep you there until midnight talking to you, because it's one, of course, you're fascinating, and all of your books are fascinating, but you have so much to offer, and that's...
Oh, well, thank you.
That's wonderful. Now, tell me, just get us excited about your new projects coming up. We have a few more minutes, and I want to talk about, because these are stories that I find fascinating.
Oh, well, thank you. Before we leave the topic of the workshop, let me just remind people of the website, where you can sign up and get all the information. And the price goes up January 1st, so enroll now. It's writeagreatbook.info, and you'll find everything you need to know there. And I think you'll really, really enjoy it. And my new series.
We'll also mention right now the cost is $149.
Mm-hmm, which is cheap.
Until the end of the year, which is coming up very fast. And after that, it's going to be $199, right?
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. So anybody who can and who didn't go crazy, remember I had that lady a few weeks ago, Polly Bauer, talking about credit cards. Hopefully you didn't fill up your credit card so you can afford to put Angela's workshop on your credit card now before the end of the year.
Great.
Okay.
Okay. New series?
Yeah, new series. This is exciting.
Oh, it's fun. It's called The Silent Years, and it's about the 400 years between the Old Testament and the New Testament, between Zechariah and Matthew. And I wanted to write about it because, first of all, to my knowledge, nobody else has done it, and because I didn't know much about it. I mean, I vaguely knew about the Maccabees, but I didn't know that there was a queen who ruled Jerusalem during those years. And I didn't know where the Pharisees and the Sadducees came from. And I didn't know how Old Testament Judaism sort of evolved into the Judaism of Christ's day. They were very, very different. And I thought, what happened in that 400 years? So I started researching, and actually the series kind of goes backwards, because I started with Cleopatra because she fascinates me, and it's only 30 years out from when Jesus was born. So, and the first book is called Egypt's Sister. It's about a Jewish girl who grew up with Cleopatra because her father was the tutor in the palace, and everything in it is the character of the main character. She is fictional, but everything about Cleopatra is absolutely historical. And then the second book is called Judah's Wife, and it's about Judah Maccabee, one of the Hasmoneans, who actually fought for Jewish freedom under a Seleucid prince named Antiochus Epiphanes, who was horrible. When you read what he did to the Jews, I mean, I think he was worse than Hitler. He's really, really bad.
And of course, this is the time of Hanukkah, And so we're very much all aware of the Maccabees and what Hanukkah means. And so this is fascinating.
And then one of Judah's family's descendants was Alexandra Salome, however you want to say it. And she was actually the queen of Jerusalem, a Jewish queen who reigned right until the Romans took over. So that will be the third book, Jerusalem's Queen. So Egypt's sister, Judah's wife, is Jerusalem's queen.
And that's fascinating because I don't think anybody remembers at all about a Jewish queen. Wow, this is going to be exciting.
I'm learning a lot and having a good time writing it.
So what do you do? You do your research, and how long does it take you to write a book nowadays?
Generally 5 to 6 months. This one's taking longer because, as I mentioned...
There's a lot of research to do here.
Well, no, because I'm selling my house.
Oh!
So my world is in boxes, and I'm always reaching for something and thinking, oh, that's in storage. So tacked on a couple months to this one. But
And then once you get organized, hopefully you have a big library so you can organize. Are your books translated in other languages?
Yes, many of them are.
Many of them? Is it exciting to have them all in all the different languages?
Yes, they're usually out in bins in the garage. So.
Now you have to now make a show place for those.
I think I will. I think I'll try to bring them someplace in my new house.
That's right.
Lord willing, I get there.
Line them all up.
Make
a wall of it in all the different languages. That would be beautiful,
It's fun.
Because the covers of your books, by the way, are gorgeous.
Oh, thank you.
They are among the very most beautiful covers.
Oh, thank
very
you.
Very well done. So I want to thank you, Angela, so much for coming on today, talking about the workshop. I will keep plugging it all the time, every week from now until February to remind people about it.
I appreciate that.
Because I think it's just part of our growing writing community here in the Clearwater, Indian Rocks, Largo, Bel Air area that we really want to bring in writers and
Going to be fun.
It is a perfect place. And I want to remind everyone to come and back on Thursday. I'm going to have a fun event. I'm going to have 5 writers in here, all of them from Eli Gonzalez is the group of writers who are going to be appearing in Barnes & Noble in January for a book signing. And so we thought, why not bring them all in, all at the same time? This is going to be fun for me. So join me on Thursday at 11, and you'll get to hear about all these writers who they're all so excited about their books coming out in January. So that's coming up. And again, Angela, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. And I hope that everybody had a great Christmas, and for people celebrating Hanukkah, you light your candles again tonight and have a great Hanukkah. And just remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. And Angela knows about it, and Ray Weaver knows about it, and so many of our wonderful local writers who are at the Miami Avenue Book Nook can tell you about it. And we're going to have some events in February where you will get to meet these people. So remember, meanwhile, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it, and join me on Thursday. This is Patsy with a Z saying thank you to Big Ed in the control room. He's been doing so well today, keeping me in line and in order and smiling at me all the time. So thank you, Big Ed. Okay, see you on Thursday. Bye.